Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. This week I'd like to meander a little bit about two behaviors, resource guarding and redirected or displaced aggression in dogs. Both of these behaviors seem to be diagnosed a lot more often. In my experience, there are two reasons for this. One is a lack of knowledge regarding normal canine behavior. Both of these behaviors evolved over thousands of years as a means of relieving stress and ensuring stability in individuals as well as groups. In that regard, they are both normal canine behaviors. Where we get into problems is when the dog's relationship with the humans in the household is such that those people become the dog's primary resource. Such abnormal human-canine role reversal, as you would imagine, generates a fair amount of stress. This lowers the dog's stimulus threshold. As a result of that, behaviors that normally would have been infrequent and quickly self-extinguished may occur more often, with the animals involved putting more energy into them. So a lack of knowledge about normal canine behavior is the first reason for the increased diagnosis of these problems. The second reason for the increased intolerance of these behaviors is fear, and that fear may arise from different sources. As a result of a lack of knowledge, people may have fear simply because they're afraid of the unknown. They simply have no idea what will happen. It never ceases to amaze me how many people are afraid of their own dogs. If the dog grabbed a container of potentially fatal ibuprofen, their first response would be to run to the refrigerator looking for something, quote, more valuable, unquote, that the dog would be willing to give up that ibuprofen for. And the reason they do this is because they're afraid of opening their dog's mouth. The other type of fear takes the form of symbolism attached to the dog. And here, behaviorism, with its reward and punishment training, has a lot to answer for. A lot of people naturally want to perceive themselves as all positive. I mean, who wouldn't? It's been a goal of the human race ever since the days of Adam and Eve. They didn't have much luck, their kids were a wreck, and they didn't get along too well with all the animals. So I'm not sure why some people today think that they have a better chance, but so it is. The problem for our dogs is that if we maintain an all positive view, if we tell ourselves that the only way we can relate to this dog is in an all positive manner, then you can understand why these people would panic when they saw their dogs displaying even normal canine behavior involving their teeth and growling and play fighting and stealing each other's toys or whatever. Anything like that that suggests that it might escalate into something that would require they discipline the dog. Because they don't want to do that. They're not prepared to do that. Discipline in any form, even a look, by definition, isn't positive. And as soon as that happens, there goes their whole philosophy. There goes their fantasy. Because of that, they can be extremely intolerant of these behaviors. They see them in terms of the potential threat to their training philosophy. If you let Snuffy take away Sneaky's toy, well, the next thing you know, they're going to be fighting, and they'll be drawing blood. So you better get on top of that right now. And if they're getting involved in some rough play or even some snarly snarking because they overload because of all of the company and the construction that's going on in the house and all of the chaos, get on top of it because something horrible would happen and you would have to stand there helpless. You would be like the person who has to run to the refrigerator looking for a steak or chicken in order to get that poisonous drug out of your dog's mouth. That's a pretty potent image, isn't it? And I can see that if I maintained such an unrealistic philosophy, I would do exactly the same thing. But I don't. I was fortunate in that I was raised with dogs and I've been around dogs a long time. I also had siblings. Anyone who's grown up with siblings, and throw in a lot of cousins and a lot of kids in the neighborhood, knows that a certain amount of resource guarding is going to occur. And you work it out. Where things get messy is when some adult interferes. Then you have to figure out how to do it behind the adult's back. And dogs are very good at this too. And kids get wound up. They get wound up by adult activities and all the noise and the chaos and the mixed signals. And sometimes they melt down. And when they melt down, hey, you pick on your sister. You pick on your brother. You pick on the kid next door. It's normal behavior, and it self-extinguishes if we stay out of it. And if we don't inadvertently make ourselves the prize in some high-stakes game. We all have our fantasies. We all want an all-positive world where lions and lambs lie down together and members of all species live in peace. But can we please, please not impose those fantasies on our dogs?
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.